This episode of AVXL was recorded on July 5th, 2018. We're going to talk about adding a shelf to the top of your TV. Netflix Ultra, we got new pricing. Samsung TVs getting FreeSync. What's up with nits and HDR? And what is a nit anyway? Google Home and your home theater, HDR 10 Plus compatibility, and my unhealthy obsession with brass against. All that and so much more coming up on AVXL.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home video and audio gear. No matter what your budget is, we're here to make sure you have the best experience you can have. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
And we are enthusiastic and full of caffeine.
Heck yeah. After all the fireworks, things are quieting down in the neighborhood.
Oh my goodness. It was about somewhere between 1 and 2 when it finally tapered off. But I live right next to Oakland.
Right.
And one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen is going into the Oakland Hills. When the inversion layer is back out over the Pacific and the view is clear. And you can watch fireworks pretty much from downtown Oakland to practically here in San Lorenzo, which is way south. And some of the most amazing firework displays are what people are doing in their backyards, or more likely in the street out in front of their, you know, like in their block party.
I've had that experience where family members, at least once in your life, hopefully you've been able to experience, someone kind of goes nuts and just buys all the fireworks. And then they go for a second delivery because they ran out at some point. And it's like, we need more. And they're setting up displays and things like that. Here in my local communities, fireworks are banned. However, that does not stop anybody from launching stuff. I will say this year, though, I am very proud to say I heard significantly fewer gunshots than I normally hear on a 4th of July holiday.
We don't hear as many, given how, you know, that I'm right next to Oakland, we don't actually hear a lot of gunshots on July 4th. The gunshots and semi-automatic weapon fire is usually reserved for New Year's Eve.
Yes, that's true too.
And there's this really funny moment where, like, 1 year Alameda will go off at 11:59:30 and 1 year Oakland will go off at 11:59:30. But it's always like, there's always like the cheering and the horns and the party horns and the mayhem and there's some firecrackers. And then invariably somebody's like, boom, 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 boom.
Man, and we've had fires to the north of us and it has been literally raining ash for the last 5 days until like yesterday.
Yeah.
And it finally cleared up and it provided just like a perfect opportunity to go watch the 4th of July festivities. So
it's much better than the times like they do the fireworks in San Francisco. They do them out in the bay.
Yes. And 50-50 shot of seeing anything.
I was going to say, like, I think one of every 3 times we've ever gone to see them in San Francisco, you see the sort of the fog glows blue. Yes. There's a big explosion and the fog glows blue for a couple seconds.
You got to go home and watch it on the news for the aerial shots where it gets above the marine layer.
Oh. Yeah.
Thank you, Carl the Fog.
Thank you, Carl. Yeah, Carl. You and your fogginess.
Welcome to AVXL.
We're so focused.
We are.
I was actually having a lot of fun yesterday. I've had relocated a bunch of stuff when my workspace, my studio for tech thing changed. We ended up in a much smaller space. I ended up bringing a bunch of gear home, which I have to get out of the kitchen to remain married, which is reasonable.
Understood.
Actually.
It's a reasonable request.
Which also involves this sort of do-over on my garage / dumping ground to turn it into a kind of a dedicated listening space, or at least part of it. And but I finally got the chance to set up the Tekton Mini Lures again.
Oh,
like 3 things are going
very
on.
Very cool.
I'm trying to finish up the full surround sound review of ELAC's debut 2.0. Probably talk about that next week.
Debut!
Monoprice sent through Monolith 12-inch subwoofer.
A very popular item, apparently.
Yeah, they're like sold out until August, so I'm not in a real super rush to...
There's my Matrix 4K dilemma. I don't know when I'll see that disc.
Someday.
You know? Yes, they will make more copies.
Search for it on eBay. I'm sure it's no more than $7,000. But I was laughing because I think I actually am going to have to put that in what I think is the optimal subwoofer position in that room. I may actually have to lift a bookshelf up 4 inches to get the subwoofer underneath it. But it is they're doing their kind of like white glove service. It comes in a sack inside of styrofoam, inside of a box, which is inside of another box, which is good because it's got the big old UPS, do not attempt to lift this, use mechanical. It's like 100 pounds.
Right. Any decent sized sub is a very dense thing to ship.
Yeah.
And it's right up there with, wow, this is an amazingly heavy box. I'm glad it's well supported because you don't want it damaged. You don't want it dinged.
You don't want to ding, you don't want to damage, and you also don't want to try to lift it yourself.
No, you shouldn't. But get help.
Yeah, there's a yeah, the subwoofer in that thing is a beast. I'll talk about that when when I'm actually doing the proper review of it. But it's
cool.
It's interesting to look at because my particular room is such a crazy mess because it's a long room and then sort of one third of one wall is open to another square room. I don't know if it quite qualifies for Audioholic's large room, but it's certainly a room that requires some work to fill with bass. And it's also, I covet having dual subwoofers in that room.
A simple soundbar won't cut it.
Well, it'll cut it. They're just,
right.
Know.
But for your low frequency response enjoyment.
Yeah, I'm on a...
You got the sub.
I want everything at the very least to be brick house solid to 30 hertz in my life. And I'm moving towards 20 hertz and eliminating standing waves.
Loving
it. Ponies.
I'm loving it.
I don't know where you found this link, but we've skipped it in the last couple of shows. So I just want to get it out there. If you're looking to adding a shelf to the top of your TV.
Yeah. Actually, it was a listener.
Okay.
Of AVXL. And forgive me for not recalling off the top of my head who it was. They highlighted a product, which I've seen other products like this before, and there are plenty out there, but there are universal shelf kits that you can effectively attach to the top of most flat panel TVs to provide a space to, say, sit a soundbar right. or a component.
Or a Roku or an Apple TV.
Exactly. A box to a device or something. If you just need a flat surface, you're no longer rolling the old school rear projection right. TV that had a nice cabinet on top where you could, you know, have some space to lay your stuff out.
There are a lot of these on Amazon.
There are. And this one, I want to say, is from a company called Top Shelf. And it is just a simple, effective way of being able to add a shelf to your TVs for just simplifying your setup. Right. Where you don't want the cable or satellite box sitting on the table or somewhere else, or you want to just be able to put some of that gear in a cleaner looking arrangement. So being able to hook one of these to the top edge of your TV and have it supported nicely, it is an option to keep in mind if you ever need something like this. The nice thing about keeping your gear up higher, I find, especially with set-top boxes of any kind, is it's easier to hit it with the remote control with infrared light. And it makes it just a far more usable experience. So
this is true.
Consider the placement of your splendid electronics.
Oh my goodness.
Especially if you're like laying in bed or something and you're like kind of looking up. You're almost always able to see that top edge of the TV. And to be able to place stuff up there securely and safely, hey, add a shelf if need be. And
just don't do it if you have a particularly thin bezel. Or a particularly thin monitor, I'd be cautious.
Yeah, if it were the thinnest of OLEDs, I'm trying to think of what design I wouldn't even trust with that.
I'd say anything under 10 millimeters, I'd get a little uptight about. But I'm...
The way they attach, though, it does spread the weight out quite nicely, unless you're placing an extremely heavy object on there, which this isn't what that's for, but in essence...
Don't put your terrarium up
there. Yeah, I don't think you'll have to fear much on any kind of TV. I would be curious to see, though, how the angle adjustment is. I imagine you're usually given a leg on this thing that is adjustable. So say if it is wall-mounted at an angle, you would still be able to use something like this, although I think that front seam then probably wouldn't look as flush to the frame of the TV itself. Yeah.
They have a lip that hangs over the front of the bezel of the TV, and then a usually a single leg goes in the back. The adjustability kind of depends on the brand.
Totally.
This one looks more fixed because it's essentially the adjustment on that top shelf one is essentially a carriage bolt, and the carriage bolt rests against the back of your machine. Stanley, or a brand that claims to be Stanley, or a brand that has licensed the Stanley yellow hardware logo, has the ATS what is it? The 106, the 112, and the 124, which are 6, 12, and 24-inch wide TV shelves. The 24-inch wide one has two legs, and they allow, certainly the 12-inch one allows a lot of range of adjustment for that. So
cool. And also realize, too, if you're not wall-mounting a TV, you still have 4 points on the back of the screen that can accept fasteners. So you could hang like a basket or a bolt or something and then attach devices to that just to help clean up the front view if you do not need line of sight to that object or that device. That's just something to keep in mind.
So many devices. I just wanted to get that out there. What's going on with the new ultra pricing for Netflix?
Hey, this story popped up a couple days ago, and what they're doing is testing a pricier ultra subscription tier, thinking now that they'd like to differentiate between their standard 4K content versus the HDR content, in effect, to create...
We would like HDR enthusiasts to pay for the HDR conversion of a lot of stuff we don't have in HDR.
Is that what they're saying?
I don't know. That's what it feels like.
Chances are this would be something that you would at least be grandfathered into your current price until the next forced updates or forced subscription updates roll around. Otherwise, yeah, that's something they are considering. I want HDR. That's the main reason I even look at Netflix. It provides a significant upgrade in the viewing experience. And it does require about 15 megabits to truly take advantage of it. That's double effectively what just the 4K stream is, according to the data I see from Netflix itself. It doesn't surprise me that they add another tier to it.
It's another four. It's $3 over the current premium option.
Yeah, so it's not like a nightmare amount of money. Yeah. It's not like they're doubling what I'm paying. And I'll be honest with you, I go out of my way to make sure that I'm getting HDR rather than just 4K on my streaming sources, especially with a compatible TV with the wide color palette and the brightness enhancements that HDR brings to the compatible TVs.
Yeah.
So something to keep in mind, better to be aware of it ahead of time. Apparently, they're testing this in Germany right now.
I'll say Germany, and I think, is it the UK? Well, certainly, definitely Germany. One of the things that Netflix told CNET is... This is a test. Quote, we are testing slightly different price points and features to better understand how consumers value Netflix, which means they're going into areas and experimenting to see how much, you know, how much blood they can draw before people, you know, back away. You know, they also told CNET, not everyone will see this test. And we may not even offer the specific price points or features included in this test. So, it makes me wonder if there's particular issues with bandwidth in certain areas. You know, has Germany adopted more, HDR televisions in the United States overall in terms of Netflix consumption?
I would also think, too, that it seems like every other country we talk about has faster average internet speeds compared to the United States. So it may be that they're using it more than we are. And at least within this household I'm part of, we have the bandwidth. And I was doing some 15.26 megabit streaming last night, comparing it to basically what's built in my TV versus a Roku device. And there's something I'll get into a little bit later. But I wasn't seeing the 15 megabit out of my Roku, but it was on the TV, and I was,
I was debating it. What's going on here?
Yeah. Need to go over some settings and check it carefully. Oh, quick tip. If you do connect one of these HDR devices, an external device, to your TV, every one of these TVs has a separate setting that you have to go in to enable uncompressed color input and other features, high bandwidth input, basically. Some of the newer TVs do enable that function automatically.
Excuse me while I start laughing. It's like, you would think it would automatically know it's receiving all of this additional information, but
I was also dealing with a TV a couple years older where you had to go through each individual input to enable that high bandwidth support. I have seen no indication that enabling that support either does degrade the image quality for any other devices. I'm not 100% certain why they just don't enable it all the time right at the factory and just eliminate that menu item altogether. That's the unknown in my head at the moment about that. But otherwise, if you do connect something like a Roku Ultra or something you expect to be able to do HDR or Dolby Vision, make sure you go check the HDMI settings on the TV to make sure it is properly enabled so you're getting max bandwidth, 18 point blah, blah, blah gigabits per second.
So oh my goodness. so to speak. FreeSync is available on the NU8000, Q6FN, Q7FN, Q8FN, and Q9FN. Once you've installed the latest firmware on one of those TVs, you can find it under Game Mode in the Settings menu. And we've been talking about Ratings has done some great jobs testing a variable refresh rate support on monitors. And now, if in case you've been wondering, it is official. It is out there.
Gamers rejoice.
Gamers rejoice.
That's cool, though. So if you have an AMD graphics card or the Xbox, I think it's just the One X. I'm not sure what other models of the Xbox support this function. But if you do, you have a really cool feature that just helps make what you're seeing look more seamless under a variety of conditions, be it you're going for max quality and it's the system's unable to keep up that fluid frame rate.
Right.
Instead of seeing visual artifacts, it will just simply reduce the frame rate being displayed to make it all look seamless. And it's good tech, and I'm glad to see it. I'm an NVIDIA graphics card user, so none of this, it's like, meh, damn it. Why does NVIDIA make their chipsets for their G-Sync technology so expensive? What the, what pixie dust goes into that that costs so damn much? And I'm sure there's a good article out there regarding that that I can check out.
So. It's a conversation for another day.
Indeed.
The 2018 TV Shootout.
Yeah!
The legendary.
HDTV test, baby. co.uk. They have upcoming, I think it's in the next week here, they'll be doing a public demonstration of having Sony, Samsung, LG TVs all pitted side by side, complete with a couple of Sony reference monitors used in professional video production, including the BVM X300, which, man, of all the displays I have ever put my eyes on in modern times, that's one of the most delicious looking production grade displays I've ever seen. It is an OLED that does 1,000 nits. And granted, I think it's only like 32 inches, but that is the monitor that if you want to, all the manufacturers now are using that monitor in particular to make even lesser TVs look as close to that image quality as possible. And in particular for detail, for, I mean, there's only so much you can do black level doing an LCD to OLED comparisons, but getting the color and detail similar to what that production monitor does is the point. And they're going to have a couple of those on hand for this shootout. So you can look at a pro-grade monitor right next to the TV in question when you're making your observations. This is open to the public, but I'm assuming it is already sold out. It was first come, first serve for about 50 seats. It is one of the most popular events for the year in terms of the best from the major manufacturers being pitted side by side and everyone give their opinion and their rating with a variety of great content, all displays being fully calibrated by the peeps over at HDTV Test. And it should prove to be, I don't know, it's just kind of an exciting thing. I know it's stressful for manufacturers. I'm always curious to see what the public thinks versus the press. That's always the back and forth. It's like, okay, here you have these, you know, jaded professionals who do these reviews all the time versus people who literally coming off the street, taking a good look in a side-by-side comparison and giving their opinion too. And I think it's all super interesting and valid. And I cannot wait to see this go down.
I don't know.
I want one of those Samsung Q9s. I'd like to see that. I'd like to spend some quality time with that TV.
Yeah, I'm starting to, I'm not quite, you know, we got at least another year out of the projector we have, maybe five. But I do say I was next to a projector recently that was almost silent. It was probably sub 25, 30 dB. And that had me thinking, like, I really need to figure out a way to quiet down my my current projector. But 4K,
quiet projectors tend to be large projectors, too.
I'm okay with large, as long as I'm not banging my head against it. Well, the other thing is you know, true 4K and true HDR support and projectors is a costly proposition at this point.
Without a doubt. And if you have to run any projector above its low lamp setting, it increases noise. And if you have to run it at high just to get an acceptable image given the room environment, you're going to hear that on any projector.
Yeah.
Although, you know, you can turn up the sound, mask it quite effectively, but
I think part of the issue is our current layout has the projector that we rearranged the living room and the projector is now or the couch is now directly underneath the projector. So I'm in the worst possible position to hear the projector
noise. Think back to every theater you've probably visited. They never have the projector sitting in the same room. Right. It's always in an isolated room shooting through a piece of very clean, specialized port glass.
Hopefully, very clean glass.
That's true. It's true. It depends where you're at, I guess. So, yeah.
These days, it's usually pretty clean.
Isolation is key, but keeping the lamp on low is also the big deal, too. And to be able to do that, given your room environment, the best thing you can do is just make your room as dark as possible.
Evan posted on patreon.com/AVXL. By the way, thank you for your patronage, Evan. If you'd like to support the podcast, if you enjoy what we do, please go to patreon.com/AVXL. Kick in a little change per episode. Kick in a... Just join us. Join us on the adventure.
A buck.
We'd appreciate that.
A buck is awesome. Yeah. Everybody's support. It keeps this going. And yes. I couldn't appreciate it more.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. So Evan posted, where is this 4,000 nit talking point coming from? It also seems to have come up on AVS Forum. Obviously, people have seen something that they can't share. You know, we should probably point out for people that are not particularly familiar with the phrase nit, it is not just the egg of a louse or a head louse.
No. It is candela per meter squared.
A unit of luminescence.
Rather than saying candela per meter squared,
right.
The shortened version of that is nits. And so that's what a nit is.
So what's the difference between a lumen and a nit?
I want to say one is dealing with emissive light versus one where you are measuring the light directly. I don't
unit
think
of luminance.
Luminance flux.
Luminance flux. Luminous, not luminance.
Oh, luminous.
Luminous. Now I'm seeing Aeon Flux in my head. Not the live action video version, but the original cartoon. A measure of the total quantity of visible light emitted by a source. The yep. SI-derived unit of luminous flux.
But when we speak about nits, we're talking about the amount of light right. streaming off the screen.
Luminous intensity.
So, something with 10,000 nits is dramatically brighter than, you know, something with 5,000 nits or lower.
Right.
Going back a few years, the best LCD TVs would spit out about 350, maybe 400 nits. Mm-hmm. That was like what they did. That was a pretty common output for those TVs. And as we moved into HDR now, the spec says that this peak brightness, I use the word brightness just because it's simple.
Right.
The peak nits can reach 10,000. There are no TVs that can do that.
Can or should? Now, we may have debated about that until you saw the Sony 10,000 nit demo at CES.
I mean, if you're trying to recreate a scene outside, right. I mean, a scene that looks like sunlight streaming, or it is, you're trying to recapture that into an imaging system, there is well in excess of 10,000 nits of light flying around out there.
You don't say.
It's still not enough to recreate reality to the level we can actually see it if right. we walk outside. However, 10,000 is a good target number. It's well above anything any TV we can buy today can currently do. When it comes to what a particular movie is authored at, that luminance, the max luminance of that video is often tied directly to the mastering display used to edit that content.
Right.
So if you're using like that BVM X300 Sony display, that hits 1,000 nits of peak detail in terms of its brightness output. That is what you're likely going to be authoring that movie at. You're going to have it in the code words embedded in that movie. It'll say, hey, I can do this whole production was authored at 1,000 nits max.
Right.
And then the TV will look at that, look at its own performance characteristics, and make the adjustments to make that fit as well as possible to come as close as possible to that original viewing experience. So there are other monitors out there, of course. You know, there are a variety of these out there. And some of the very best ones in terms of absolute brightness break 4,000 to 6,000 nits now. I want to say it's Dolby's Pulsar display, I think, is 6,000 nits. I've seen some demonstrations of 6, 7, 8,000 nit displays used for mastering. Then if it is authored to that level of detail and the colorist decides that, you know what, this is what I authored everything on, it happened to be a 6,000 nit monitor, then we can put the code words in the final content that say, hey, we verify this out to 6,000 nits. I also see a lot of colorists and video production folks using displays with far less light output, well under 1,000 nits. So you'll find a lot of HDR movies, too, are curiously authored at around 600 to 700 nits. that, I think, is a direct result of more people incorporating things like OLED displays in the authoring suites. So something to keep in mind. When we're talking about these nit levels, there's the, what the display can produce in terms of what's in your home. There is what the author, when they were creating the content, were looking at.
Intended.
Yeah. And those two often don't match. So it's being able to then say, and with these code words within the video stream itself, to say, hey, here's what the monitor that it was produced on did. What does your TV do? And let the electronics do all the magic to make that come out as good as possible.
Interesting thoughts. I would like to point out that the candela per meter square is the official international system.
SI, baby.
SI unit of luminescence. The nit is the non-SI name, which people think comes from the Latin word nitere, to shine. Luminance is the photometric, I'm going to quote Wikipedia here, the measure of the luminous intensity per unit area of light traveling in a given direction. So I think of it as kind of the, you know, the difference between voltage and amperage, and the lumen is the measure of luminous flux, which is the measure of the perceived power of light.
Indeed.
So many.
Something else to keep in mind, too. It is directional, especially on TVs. Yeah. You think about LCDs in particular. I actually have a set of caps that will go over the end of my color meter, and it allows me, they're all angled at specific angles, like, oh, here's 45, 20, 25, whatever.
Is that to block the light from the surrounding pixels?
It's just so that I can take an angled measurement to show that, oh, when you get off axis, here's what happens. Or it'd be consistent with the angles. Right. So it's like, okay, I'll put on the 20-degree cap. It's angled at 20 degrees,
that's
and I'm able to measure.
That's the person who walked into the room last to watch the movie and has the horrible chair far to the left or right
so
of the monitor.
So you can do things, not only luminance measurements, you can also do, like, how does color change off axis? And that's one thing that the ratings folks do really well. They actually measure all of their displays that they test across a variety of angles, and then they record how the color changes across that graph. And it makes it very just visual and quick to see that, yeah, it significantly changes on most TVs by sitting significantly off axis.
In a way that's noticeable if you're at all paying attention to the actual thing you're watching.
For those LCDs, it's still the case where you really do need to sit front and center. There is a panel technology called IPS that is quite popular in some LG TVs and other manufacturers that does offer superior off-axis viewing, but the black levels aren't as good as what they call the vertically aligned panels.
So say the black levels are kind of atrocious compared to
they
vertically aligned
be.
Patterns.
Even with things like full array panels. Local dimming, it still, I find that, you want a VA panel, you want to be front and center to it, and that will come as close to an OLED as you can do with current LCD technology.
So snuggle up tight to get the best possible experience in terms of video quality.
Articulating
and color.
Wall mounts.
Awesome. I love it. Dan answered our call for feedback about using Google Home with his home theater. We'd love to hear your thoughts, too. Email ask@avxl.com. You got a question, you got a thought, you got an idea, ask@avxl.com is the place to send it. Or tweet at Robert Herron, at Patrick Norton, or at AVXL. We're talking about Dan, though, who writes, hey, Patrick and Robert, Dan here from hot, sweaty, and beautiful Dallas, Georgia, about 40 minutes west of Atlanta, depending on traffic. I'm currently listening to episode 81, and you guys asked about how we use our smart home speaker devices. As a person who owns four Google Home Minis in the kitchen, the garage, the kids' bedrooms, and one JBL Link 10 with Google Assistant built in the master bedroom, there isn't much I don't do with the Assistant. First off, is the lights. I have 7 Philips Hue light bulbs and 3 different light switches. 2 of them were made by Leviton. 1 is an Insignia. That's the house brand for Best Buy, if you haven't heard of that. In the house, I use with Google Home to turn on the lights. I also have timers to turn on or off specific lights at specific times. Next is my home theater. I turn it on using my voice with the Logitech Harmony Hub. I can literally say, hey G, ask Harmony to turn on my TV, and with a few clicks of my Panasonic Plasma for life, or at least until OLED significantly drops in price, my Yamaha AVR, my NVIDIA Shield all turn on. Speaking of the NVIDIA Shield, it also functions as a Chromecast. So, for instance, I can say, hey, G, play Stranger Things. And if I use the Google Home closest to the TV in the kitchen, I don't have to specify which set I use. It also works with YouTube TV, so I can tell it to go to a specific channel or something that I DVR'd. My kids both have white hue bulbs in their rooms and Chromecast hooked up to their TV so they can use them. In that regard, we also use them as a whole home alarm clock. We can run a routine in the home app that automatically turns on their lights and plays some music at a specific time to get them up. It works to varying degrees, but that's more on the kids than the tech. And I really want to experiment with that in my house. Lastly, Dan writes, I can even close my garage via Google Home and the MyQ garage lift. It only closes the garage and it won't open it for obvious security reasons. I'm always thinking of ways to make my home smarter, and if I'm ever in a store and I see a device that says it's voice assistant compatible, I will at least pause to think about how it could help me. I may not buy it, but I will at least have thought about it. Sorry for the long-winded reply, but you did ask for it, Dan. Dan also adds a PS, a postscript. How can you guys talk about good whole home audio and not mention the Chromecast audio? $35 each, and you can hook them to almost any piece of equipment you own. What's not to love? Oh my goodness. First of all, Dan, awesome. Awesome feedback.
Thank you.
That was really cool to hear how you're using that in your home theater and around your home. I actually have a Chromecast audio in my pile of stuff to test that I haven't gotten to. I've been playing around with Rune Labs and Volumio too much. Mostly, I think, because most of the things I would plug a normal human being would plug a Chromecast audio into, I already have better devices plugged into. So
gotcha.
I will... or at least more sophisticated devices, maybe not better.
I actually like his garage door setup with that MyQ garage lift. I just like the idea of, you know what, maybe they weren't sure of potential security issues, and they said, we'll make it so it can only close the door.
You know,
there is no way for this device to open the damn garage door unexpectedly or in a... inappropriately.
As somebody who spends a lot of time with security professionals...
Sometimes less is better.
Sometimes less is smarter.
Yeah, safer.
And assuming that something will never be hacked is usually a sign that it either A, already has been hacked, or B, will be hacked just as soon as the return time.
Yep.
The return policy end of date is over. Steven emailed, quick question. I've searched but haven't found a definitive answer, so I figured I'd go to you, my font of all AV knowledge. Concerning HDR 10 Plus, I'm curious if it works or will work in a way in which the dynamic metadata is an over-the-top layer of some sort that will allow backwards compatibility. In other words, will my 2017 Vizio M series, which only supports HDR 10 and Dolby Vision, which I gotta say, Steven, is better than most televisions. It has both HDR 10 and Dolby Vision. If it will see an HDR 10 Plus stream and play it back as good old HDR 10. Is there an HDR 10 core beneath, or is it more like a completely different flavor of HDR? Thanks. Love the show. Longtime viewer, follower, and patron. Thank you, Steven. If something's encoded in HDR 10 Plus, your HDR 10 will play it, as far as I know, just without the dynamic metadata.
And I believe that is the case.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way to bring dynamic metadata to a TV that isn't rigged for it. That's a really good question.
There aren't many TVs out there that currently support HDR 10 Plus. There are a couple companies. The number of companies now supporting this open standard for HDR content with dynamic metadata is growing. Mm-hmm. God, and it seems like LG and Sony are the Dolby Vision folks at the time, for the time being. Oh, in addition to others too, like TCL, and there's plenty of companies out there actually supporting both. So in terms of backward compatibility, I would think you're correct, and I haven't seen anything to the contrary, where if your TV is not HDR 10 enabled, but that is the stream it's receiving somehow, I'm still not sure how you're getting this content, you would be able to play that back on any HDR 10 compatible television.
Right.
And at least experience the HDR effects, the wide color palette, and the dynamic metadata would only kick in if you had that full compatibility with HDR 10 Plus.
I would also like to update what I said before. It looks like in some cases, for example, like Samsung's KS8000, which is a 2016 model, they've released what people are saying is HDR 10 Plus firmware on Samsung's Korea site, but it may or may not be available in the US site. It wasn't earlier this year.
Cool. I want the 2017 models. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this was actually a 2016 model, or maybe it was announced in 2016. But
maybe, actually. You may be correct on that.
Oh, wait. It looks like they actually installed it, and it does not appear to have the HDR 10 Plus setting inside of it.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Samsung, for example, I think did a press release where they said they were going to bring it to older models. The biggest challenge is actually finding HDR 10 Plus content to play.
I'm still not aware of anything.
Then how would you actually verify?
Unless it was just demo material created one-off.
Right.
I'm more concerned about just having Dolby Vision compatibility.
Yeah.
That's really what I want.
You know, it's
HDR 10 Plus as an open standard. I absolutely love open standards. They can be cheaper to implement, and I'd like to see that on more TVs. We'll see if that happens.
It's certainly, there's a lot of people frustrated on the Samsung forums and arguing over whether or not they really announced HDR 10 Plus, or if they, you know, it's funny because like the link to the original press release doesn't work anymore. So then you have to sort of try to find the original press release.
It may be a boon for console developers, for gaming, just in the sense that here's an open standard you can start applying today. And then that gives you a directly connected device.
Right.
Given the recent FreeSync support being added to Samsung televisions, this might be one other thing they could add in before the end of the year.
I will say,
and get these tools out to the people making the content. I don't know about pro video production, like for making DVDs and Blu-rays and things like that and streaming content. I assume it wouldn't be hard for someone like Netflix to just add another format if there's demand for it.
Didn't we just talk about Netflix charging extra as part of a test in certain regions?
Oh, sure we will. Here, give me $3 more a month and we'll take care of that for you.
I'll give you your dynamic metadata, buddy. I will walk back what I said earlier. It may be possible for them to do the firmware update to bring HDR 10 plus to your television, How long that will take, given the dearth of HDR 10 plus content and all of the other things that television manufacturers are dealing with right now, I would be super patient about this, especially given that there doesn't seem to be much of anything you can actually play.
For the current time being, I'm seeing more importance for something like HLG, the hybrid log gamma format, for things like
live over the, well, yeah,
for
live
the recent
over the air.
World Cup. That was some of the only, I think that was the only format it was being delivered in to people with compatible televisions and the appropriate set-top box gear. And for you satellite enjoyers of this 4K content, I am jealous. There's just, I don't know. It seems like we're about a year behind any other country in terms of being able to either stream it or to have set-top box compatibility for people subscribing to subscription TV services, cable, satellite, or even OTT boxes, over-the-top boxes, like using your Roku with an appropriate streaming TV service and that kind of thing. I'd like to see more options for dynamic metadata just to improve image quality. Mm-hmm. But currently, it's the lack of content is the big one.
Seems like a repeating theme.
Yeah. So. Chicken, egg, what?
Speaking of chickens and eggs, or horses and carts, Eric writes, Ask at AVXL, Dearest AV Gurus, I need your help to get out of my own head regarding my system. I know that pain. I recently upgraded my TV to a Sony XBR55X900F and my receiver to a Yamaha RX-V583. Both of these support Dolby Vision and HDR10, and the receiver supports Dolby Atmos. I also have an Apple TV 4K and an Xbox One X hooked up. The sound is running through one of the older Polk 5.1 soundbars with a subwoofer attached. Here's where my upgrade decision path starts spinning me around in circles. The Xbox One X does have Atmos support available, but does not support Dolby Vision. I've signed a petition with over 2,600 signatures to implore Microsoft to supply it with a software upgrade, but no official news from Microsoft. Meanwhile, a soundbar is the right approach for the space I have available, but the good soundbars that support Atmos seem to be $1,200+. So, if you can answer the following questions to the best of your ability, I'd truly appreciate it. 1. Do you think there's a real chance that Microsoft adds Dolby Vision support to the Xbox One X? 2. Am I going insane, or does Sony sell the UBF700 disc player, which offers Dolby Vision support, and the UBP800 disc player, which offers Atmos support, but does not have a player that offers both? 3. Is there a reasonably priced disc player that offers both Dolby technologies? I'd love the Oppo, but I can't justify the $1,000+ prices they are now commanding. 4. Am I a crazy person for considering spending as much on an Atmos soundbar as I did on my TV? And do you have one you recommend? Any information you can provide would be greatly appreciated and might save me a trip to the padded room. Love the show, and I am proud to be a Patreon supporter. Keep up the great work, Eric. Well, thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
I'm going to draw a rather random example here, but when you start doing competitive long-distance shooting, when you're like shooting out over 500 yards, one of the rules that comes up is you spend about as much on the glass, the optics, the scope, as you do on the rifle. And I bring that up because, you know, for years until, you know, CPU performance got kind of out of control, until it got to the point where you're getting staggering amounts of CPU performance and graphics card prices went insane. Or when your graphics card that should have cost about the same as your CPU is costing four times as much as your CPU. By the way, if you've been waiting for a GPU, the prices are back down. Go forth and purchase. But, you know, when you're looking at a gaming rig, one of the rules of thumb is you spend about as much on your GPU as you do on your CPU. And sometimes you spend more on your GPU. So you look at $1,200, which is a fair amount of cash, but compared to buying, you know, a 5.1 speaker system, like a nice set of 5.1 speakers and an AVR and all the cable, $1,200 may actually be really cheap compared to, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 7 speakers plus a subwoofer plus an AVR. So to put that $1,200 in perspective, you know, that's $300 for the AVR, $400 for the AVR, and another $800-$900 for the speakers. So $1,200 is not that out of control. It just feels painful when you're like, I get this, I get a soundbar. And you'll probably for $1,200 get a soundbar with a couple of remote satellites and a subwoofer. Will it be as good as the discretes?
No.
Probably not.
Hell no.
Will it be a lot easier to fit into your room and not piss anybody off? Almost certainly. Will it be better than the speakers and the TV? Absolutely. So I do not think you are a crazy person for considering spending as much on an Atmos soundbar as you did on your TV.
I just wouldn't do it.
The Atmos soundbar implementation is not my favorite.
Unless you can have ceiling speakers.
Yeah.
2, 4, or more. I wouldn't even think about Atmos too much. I would just go for good 5.1
right.
Dolby True HD, DTS HD Master Audio support. It is nice to fire up an Xbox and have that link right into your AVR and drive a Dolby Atmos system. That sounds right. Freaking fantastic on the demo material they have. In addition to the handful, I'm not even sure how many games actually support Dolby Atmos nowadays. I think it's less than 5.
Right.
So I just think for the money to throw down to have a soundbar claim Dolby Atmos support, it's going to be doing some sort of upfiring technology to create those height channels. And
I have had some good upfiring experiences.
Yeah.
I don't think they are nearly as awesome as downfiring speakers in the ceiling.
Not at all.
And if you have any kind of texture on your ceiling or a popcorn ceiling, it does really squirrely stuff to upward firing Atmos.
He asked, too, do you think there's a chance that Microsoft may add Dolby Vision support to the Xbox One? Maybe. They may be able to do that within software in some way, the way Sony did it with some of their premium TVs. There's a possibility there. I would think they would add HDR 10 Plus support first before they do that. That's where I was curious, too, about the gaming industry and what they're looking at in terms of going forward with HDR. Right now, it's just HDR 10 as far as gaming goes, as far as I know. As far as disc players go, you know, that's a good question. I was just eyeballing the Philips 4K Blu-ray player with Dolby Vision support. And I was curious now if it does Atmos audio output. And I want to say it should. Because the way Atmos is engineered, it doesn't require really anything special as far as HDMI. As long as the signal's there and it can be passed through to an appropriate receiver, that should work dandy.
Yeah, it's also...
And it does, actually. Here, just to answer my own question real quick, it does... they don't explicitly list Atmos, but it is. So for that Philips player, and what is the model number of this babe? The BDP-7502, currently available for $180 on Prime. That's the player I kind of have my eyeball on in terms of I'm not ready to drop the money if it's even still available for an Oppo 203 or a 205.
The Oppos are selling for, the Oppo 203 are selling for like a grand from third-party sellers.
Great.
Some of them are refurbished. The 205, I think there's like one for sale for $3,800 on Amazon.
Time is ticking.
Yeah, unless Oppo...
Collector's items.
Yeah, they talked about selling out current stock and maybe doing some additional sales, but I would put sort of a, you know, an automatic alert on that product, but I would not, unless a container of those.
So for question number three, at least I can say that it appears, according to everyone who owns one of those Philips players, that it does in fact do both. It has Dolby Vision support right on the box, but it also supports Dolby Atmos as well. You can get that to your appropriate decoder of choice. But when it, I am a downfiring speaker proponent for doing Dolby Atmos. And if that's just not an option, I wouldn't put forth any additional funds to try to fake it.
Yeah. And it's not, it's funny because it's not, I don't want to say that, I don't want to say that, that Atmos is an immature technology because it's not. It's just that there's such a limited number of titles at this point. You know, this is, again, this is our chicken and the egg theme for this episode.
Truly.
Where I would say, you know, buy a basic Vizio you know, 3.1 or 5.1 surround sound system. It'll sound great. It'll be easy to install. It'll run forever. And that's the $300 version of it. You can get one of the fancier ones if you feel like it. And then wait to see where Atmos settles out. Like, Atmos is not going to go away the way 3D did, because, you know, object-oriented sound, or basically be able to well, object sounds, sound objects, to be able to, for an audio designer to be able to position those in the theater is a spectacular tool. That's not going away. That's hard-baked into Hollywood at this point.
Everything making sound represented as its own object within 3D space. That is here. That is being used by many production houses already. And they're currently using tools to even auto-convert old content that wasn't given the Dolby Atmos treatment, a Dolby Atmos-like effect.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think it's just going to be one of those frustrating things where you are waiting. And I think the longer you wait, the better your options are going to get.
That recent trip down to Netflix, when we did the tour of their facilities, their Dolby Atmos processing and authoring was a huge part of it. They're all over that.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to more sources of that content, more movies, and I need to see an updated list too of what movies actually are supporting Atmos now. I'm sure there's a list right on the handy dandy Dolby website.
I'd also like to point out, if you dig deep into the full list of features for the Sony UBP X700, you can find both Dolby Vision and Atmos listed in there. If you go into the UBP X800, you get DTS:X, you get Atmos, but you do not get Dolby Vision. The fact that that's the more expensive, you know, that's either a terrible glitch in their list of specs or a very peculiar situation where a $200 Blu-ray player has more features than the $250 Blu-ray player.
Ah.
Or is it Ultra HD Blu-ray player?
Sometimes a particular model might just be, it was a short run.
Right.
And they decided, you know what, we ended up doing this more premium model that we really ended up, it's unnecessary in our current lineup.
Yeah.
But that's one thing, though. If you are shopping for an ultra high def 4K Blu-ray player with HDR support of any kind, be aware that they're all starting at about $180. If you suddenly see this $60 player claiming it's 4K, 99.9% of the time, that's simply doing upconversion. Right. It likely won't even be compatible with a 4K disc. It is made to upconvert your Blu-rays and your DVDs and things like that.
Right. Just like a real UHD Blu-ray player, except without the UHD Blu-ray support. Sigh. Oh my goodness, we got to wrap this one up because insanity is imminent.
Ah, it is.
Plus, we both want to go outside and breathe some air that is free of ash. Lord knows what I've been breathing in for the last week, or my children.
Man, if you have respiratory issues, while I appreciate the beautiful red sunsets that having particulate matter in the skies can cause, it was reminding me a little too much of places I've been overseas where it was like, hey, this is a red flag day. Get your N95 mask on.
Stop breathing until tomorrow.
Oh.
Wasn't too bad. The nice thing is, you know, let's not even go down this rat hole.
No, and may the awesome crews that fight these fires and try to keep us all safe, may they just continue to kick ass like they have.
And may they continue to stay safe.
I'm not going to say this is all year, all the time, but it's in the last few years now. It has been fire season, which it equates to things burning to the north, sending all the ash down south and raining ash everywhere.
Saw Only the Brave last week.
Oh.
It's out online.
I was rewatching Altered Carbon just to test 4K UHD streaming on Netflix.
I rewatched the first episode of... first of all, let me say Josh Brolin and the whole crew that in Only the Brave, they do a really nice homage to the Grant Mountain Hotshots.
Oh, cool.
All of which but one died fighting a forest fire.
Oh, that.
Yeah, it's not... Jeff Bridges is in there too. It's a really fantastic
worst case scenario.
Yeah, and it's really horrific. They don't show anything particularly gruesome. It's just scary as hell when you know, if you've ever stood near a forest fire, it's scary as hell.
It's powerful. It's amazingly powerful.
And they did a pretty good job of giving you the feels of standing next to a forest fire. Jennifer Connelly is in it too. There's a really nice cast. Annie McDowell has a nice role.
Some of the toughest people I know.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Forestry service firefighting. that group, California Forestry Department.
Yeah, humping a rock and a chainsaw and, with and a 30-inch blade.
The crazy hottest weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
bless
thank
those people, man,
for keeping the fires in check. But that's a pretty good movie. It's funny because I was rewatching Altered Carbon last night myself.
Ah.
Less for the,
I really like that sci-fi story.
It's not the most sophisticated sci-fi story, but there's enough twists and turns to keep you interested.
You know, it's a good murder mystery.
The rumor is that they spent more on that than any other series they've created so far.
The whole thing looks like Blade Runner quality. Yeah. I mean, it's just like the visuals and the HDR production. Mm-hmm. With the amount of like in the city scenes with the neon lighting and everything, it makes a damn TV look fantastic. Yeah. And when we were visiting Netflix, they were actually authoring that content.
Oh, that's funny.
On the LG OLED panels. So that especially if you have an LG
made
OLED,
in heaven.
It's just that superb black level with that punchy color. It's just visually stunning.
I really want to see. I really want to see a lot of the street scenes from Altered Carbon, where there's this mixture of you are in a dark alley, but there are all these artificial sort of neon sign-esque displays that are popping up. I'd really like to see that on a full HDR television. If you haven't, I know I've mentioned them before, but I love them so much. Tiny Desk Concerts.
Oh, cool.
They're on YouTube. You can also find those on npr.org/series/tiny-desk-concerts. Great way to find new music. I'm still mildly obsessed with Brass Against, which is the brass band that covers Rage Against the Machine. They, along with their YouTube channel,
Brass Band, kicking ass.
BrassAgainst.com is their website, and they're also on Spotify.
I was experimenting with auto calibration on Samsung LCDs on the oldest one that supports it, and it goes all the way back to the JS series. Go figure, some of the problems that we saw initially with LG's 2018 lineup with their AutoCal function with Calman software from portrait displays. There was an initial issue where, and it may not even be visible in regular content, but if you looked at a gradient before and it looks perfectly smooth, you run the AutoCal, there's now some steps in it that weren't there before.
Oh, interesting.
What I find on these auto calibration systems is that it's too easy for the software to take settings to the extreme. In the case of Samsung's TVs, it's literally just adjusting the menu settings. It's not doing a customized lookup table that's being programmed or anything like that. It's literally just automating the control of the menu settings themselves. And when you do white balance setup, you're adjusting that color of gray to get it really neutral. If you take any of the settings to a max, chances are you're clipping or potentially clipping or blowing out some of that detail. And that can introduce banding in the setup. So what I noticed in the case of the particular Samsung I was working on, the darkest grays were being adjusted to like way beyond what I would normally twist a dial on any TV. And while I appreciated the convenience of having an auto calibration function, I then went back and looked at some nice gradients that were smooth before and suddenly weren't. And it then made me realize, while I appreciate AutoCal, there are some pitfalls related to it in terms of just letting a system do all the adjustments. It's good to go take a look at what values it came up with, if possible. And if parts of it can be done, quote unquote, by hand, it's sometimes the way to do it. In particular, from my experience, I found that if I did the grayscale setup and I didn't twist all the knobs to extreme limits, and then I had the TV go ahead and do the color adjustments, that worked out really well.
Nice.
It was kind of like a, I would say, an AutoCal assisted calibration. Not necessarily the full bore, but more people are contacting me with their brand new 2018 LG OLEDs looking for that AutoCal setup. And what's great about that is it's simply compatible with all the presets.
Right.
So you can do six setups on that TV covering gaming to movies to Dolby Vision, Dolby Atmos, or not Dolby Atmos, but Dolby Vision HDR 10, HLG, whatever you want, in a fairly automated way. Always a good time.
Oh my goodness. Something that popped up literally halfway through us recording this. Speaking of Chromecast and Chromecast audio, as we were earlier, the crew at Rune Labs has added Chromecast to its connected devices. So that's, we've talked
very
about.
Very cool.
Yeah. We'll talk about that some next week. Grouped playback on Chromecast devices via the Google Home app. Which is pretty, pretty cool. And so you can now stream the Chromecast audio, Google Home Mini, and Google Home Max. Audio with cover art and artist photos can be streamed to Chromecast Gen 1, Gen 2, and Ultra. That's pretty slick. So high resolution, gapless music up to 96 kilohertz, 24 bits, and apply Rune's powerful DSP, including EQ, room correction, headphone crossfeed, and more. Somebody had tweeted at one point that they thought Rune was outrageous because it's, I want to say it's a, you have to pay for it, you see.
Correct.
And it's $119 a year, or you get a lifetime for $499.
Right.
Unless you buy a piece of hardware, for example, the device I've been playing around with, the ELAX Discovery Series DS S101G, which includes a lifetime subscription to Rune Essentials, which is like the sort of down-tuned or the light version of Rune Lab software. But, you know, one, I just wanted to point out that they're working really hard to do really interesting things with Rune. And yeah, they charge $120 a year or $500 for $499 for a lifetime membership. But they're trying to create a superior tool to experience and explore your music collection with. And I am okay with paying for software so that people can actually eat and have health insurance and stuff like that. And I run into a lot of people, you know, if you don't want to pay for it, like, go play with Volumio. Radically different experience. Or use a $5 app in your Android phone. But you know, it's okay to charge money for software.
Oh, without a doubt. And I find too, if it's something you, I kind of make a gut decision right when I buy a service like that. Am I going to use it for more than a couple of years? And if the answer is even approaching yes, then I'm more tempted just to get the lifetime membership. I used to do that right with TiVo products all the time. It's like, you know, I know I'm going to have this thing for minimum a year. Mm-hmm. And it's more like, no, I'm going to be here for probably 2 or 3+ years using the same product. Just get the lifetime subscription on it. So you don't even have to think about it. And it makes for better resale value, too, down the road. Right.
Well, the lifetime subscriptions,
if it's transferable still, who knows?
It's a big chunk of money for me right now. But, you know, I think I can slide the 120. In any case, a little a nice update from Rune Labs. We got to wrap this one up, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening to This Week in Computer Hardware. No, for listening to AVXL. We're here to help you pursue the most awesome experience with your audio and your video. And
your
as
home
always,
theater dreams.
Oh, my goodness. You're looking for better headphones? We can help with that, too. We have talked about tuning your room for audio performance. I am full of distractions today, so I'm going to run away screaming. I'm going to calmly walk away from the podcast. AVXL.com is the website. It's got all the links. Patreon.com/AVXL is the place to help support the podcast. We'd appreciate you joining in there. And as always, at Robert Herron, at Patrick Norton, at AVXL, or just email ask@AVXL with your questions, your thoughts, your ideas, your curiosities. There's a lot of thousands of you are out there listening, and we know you have questions, and we'd love to hear them. So fire them out, ask@AVXL.com. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, hope you had an amazing July 4th and you can still hear. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
We'll catch you next week on AVXL.